how's it going? Susan Ruth here. Thanks for listening to another episode of Hey Human Podcast. This is episode 397, and my guest is Mikey Weinstein. He has so many accolades and things that he's done. I'm going to quote directly from the website of the company that he is the president and founder of, militaryreligiousfreedom.org, to describe him. Mikey is, quote, the undisputed leader of the national movement to restore the obliterated wall separating church and state in the most technologically lethal organization ever created by humankind, the United States Armed Forces. Described by Harper's Magazine as the constitutional conscience of the U.S. military, a man determined to force accountability. He's an Air Force veteran, and Mikey's family has a long and distinguished U.S. military history, spanning three consecutive generations of military academy graduates and over 130 years of combined active duty military service in every major combat engagement our country has been in, from World War I to the current global war on terror. He's a registered Republican and, as a lawyer, spent over 3 years working in and for the West Wing of the Reagan administration as legal counsel in the White House. In his final position there, Mikey was named the committee management officer of the much-publicized Iran-Contra investigation in his capacity as assistant general counsel of the White House Office of Administration, Executive Office of the President of the United States. He's the author of With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against the Evangelical Coup in America's Military, and also No Snowflake in an Avalanche, The Military Religious Freedom Foundation, Its Battle to Defend the Constitution and One Family's Courageous War Against Religious Extremism in High Places. He likes long titles too, so that's a mouthful. In 2012, Defense News named Mikey one of the 100 most influential people in the U.S. defense. In 2014, for the sixth consecutive year, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation was officially nominated for the 2015 Nobel Peace Prize, its seventh total nomination. He is a force of nature, and that's an understatement. He moves quickly, he speaks quickly, and he's on a mission. A really fascinating conversation. Check out Hey Human Podcast for links and to learn more about my guests and the show. Check out SusanRuth.com to learn about me and my other artistic endeavors. Follow Susan Ruthism and Hey Human Podcast on social media. Find my albums on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your music. Rate, review, and subscribe to Hey Human Podcast on iTunes or Spotify or iHeart or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. Be well, be kind, be love. Here we go. Everyone, this is a trigger warning for this episode. Violence, threats, and language that is not the usual F-bomb or whatnot. It's a little bit more intense. So just FYI, trigger warning. Mikey Weinstein, welcome to Hey Human.
Thank you. It's great to be a human. And hey.
Hey. Shout out to Gary for introducing us.
Yeah, very much so.
I appreciate that. He's awesome. Let's jump right in. I like to start these shows with a background of you as to what shaped you. Obviously, I know you went to the Air Force Academy, but just as a child, the household that you grew up in, how did that shape you as a person?
You know, I've been watching my youngest son got me into the NBC TV show This Is Us. That show is very much about that. You know, I grew up in a very strong nuclear family. My dad went to the Naval Academy and took his commission in the Air Force because the Air Force Academy hadn't started yet. It technically started in 54, and he graduated from Annapolis in 53. So he went into the Air Force, and you know, my family was a military family. My dad was strict, but not cruel. He was loving. My mom was very loving. And, you know, but we knew early on, we were not like most other people in the military. We were Jewish, you know. I mean, I'm still proud to be Jewish very much. Ethnically and culturally, I just don't buy into the theology that much. I still, you know, I'll pray three times a day in Hebrew. I'm not sure there's anybody up there, but The values I got were built on, despite the fact that we're all, you know, human beings that make a, 100 mistakes a day, maybe be more like 200, is that we're both mostly the key things. I think you could probably wrap up, Susan, the 10 commandments into just two, which is to help each other and love each other. Hard to do. And so trying to give back to the community and to when you do serve in the military, in the nation, you are protecting the country, you know, which is our tribe, as it were. And these days, that's a very difficult thing because we are an incredibly divided country. It's divided husband and wife, brother and sister, parents and kids, grandparents and grandkids. I just had a lunch today with a friend, I guess I can use that term, of almost 30 years, who's completely MAGA. You know, he's been that way. It's very hard for me to even sit with him. While I was during lunch, we got a very hideous slur that came in saying, I'm not sure if I can say, fuck you, Jews. Or kikes, fuck you, kikes. That's right. And then he's, my friend started mentioning that, well, the K word to Jews can't be equated to the N word to Black people because, you know, Blacks have suffered much more than Jews have. And besides that, the word kike had been used for many other people in prior years, which, of course, it's ridiculous to start talking about who has suffered more here, there, whatever. And how do you even talk to somebody like that? You know, and so I've been forced to sever based on my upbringing and how I have view reality. Through the my parents and through the experiences that I had, we all are creatures of cumulative experience. So I have one of my classmates from the academy that I retained in my orbit, who would be in the MAGA world, and then this other person. It's very hard. He recently lost a parent, and so I'm trying to be kind about it. But it was everything I could do to stay at the table during lunch because I just wanted to get up and tell him to fuck off. You know. So bottom line is, we all make mistakes. We're all trying. I think probably the best thing was recently the late Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman that ever got to the Supreme Court. And boy, do we miss her. As she was among her last words to her children, she recently just passed away, very recently. She just said, I think it was to her son. He mentioned it, and I believe in her eulogy in Phoenix, Arizona, that she said, you know, we're basically here to help each other along the way. The bottom line is none of us really know what we're doing here, how we got here. Didn't ask to be here, where we're going afterwards. We can have all this dogma if we want, but we're free in this country to follow anything we want to. But we created a government that cannot tell you which dogma to follow. And when you use, in our case, the U.S. Marine Corps, Navy, Army, Air Force, Space Force, the U.S. Coast Guard, the U.S. Maritime Service, Susan, or any 17 national security agencies, or even if you're a high school junior ROTC teacher, you cannot use the awesome power, heft, and prestige and financial impact or financial strength of the U.S. government, mostly in our case, the Department of Defense, to act as a force multiplier to push a particular dogma on otherwise helpless subordinates. I always tell people that we are not a complex meal like Chateaubriand. We're a freaking hamburger. You can't use your position of influence on a subordinate in the U.S. military mostly, but these other places I mentioned as well, the Veterans Administration, all those intelligence agencies, and to force a subordinate to adhere to your particular biblical worldview. Because we've never really ever had a Muslim superior do that or a Jewish superior. We had one atheist superior that tried that years ago. It's almost always what we would now refer to as a fundamentalist Christian nationalist. It's a very, very serious fight. We are in it. We are very aggressive and we are militant. I mean, we get accused of being that. I'd say very proudly we are, but we're fighting against the technologically most lethal organization, Susan, ever created in the history of Homo sapiens, which is the U.S. military. So you can't sit there and drink your tea with your little finger sticking out and following these Marquis de Queensberry rules when you're trying to advocate for a subordinate that is otherwise going to be crushed. And so it's...
That's, and you're talking specifically where COs or people in position of power basically tell their subordinates, if you don't follow my religious dogma that I believe in, your life is going to be made a living hell.
Correct. And the religious dogma is almost in 99.9% of the cases, it's what we refer to as Christian dominionism or fundamentalist Christian nationalism. Basically, it's the weaponized version of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We're almost at 87,000 clients. I think we'll pass it in the next couple of days. About 95% of them are Christians themselves. About 3/4 are Protestant. The other 1/4 are Roman Catholic. The other 5% are Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, you know, Native American. We've had every type of religious or non-theistic viewpoint, you know, obviously atheists, agnostics, secularists, and humanists, except for one. We've never had a Scientologist yet.
You might, you just don't know it.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I know they have a large worship facility in the LA area, maybe more than one.
Huge. There's many. Quickly, I just want to point out, so you are the founder of Military Religious freedomfoundation.org for those that want to look it up. And that is your life's mission now. The thing to point out, I think, that is important is when one joins a world of service to the nation, it is intended to represent the whole of the nation, not just one section, one religion, one creed, one color, one sexual orientation. That's not how it's not how it was supposed to be. And so you come in when people reach out to you and say, this is going on in my realm of work or military service or whatever, and then you come in and try and help them stop it in its tracks. Can you explain a little bit of how it works?
Yes. Anyone can go to our website at mrff.org. Our clients come to us because if they try to fight themselves, it's, you know, most everybody's been to a wedding. And when you try to stand up for your civil, constitutionally guaranteed, and they're not privileges, you know, they're rights, separation of church and state in the military, it's like you turn yourself into what we call a tarantula on a wedding cake. And we've all been to weddings. Tarantulas on wedding cakes don't last very long. And when your military superior is proselytizing you, normally with this weaponized gospel of Jesus Christ, get the hell out of my face, sir or ma'am, is not an option for you. So they come to us. We generally go two levels above their own commander, and then we weigh in. We've been doing this for, you know, we're in our 21st year of doing this now. We're pretty well known. We have over 900 people that work here. Like many civil rights organizations, many are volunteers, like at the ACLU and all these other organizations. And of course, our paid staff, we have MRFF representatives, some more than one, in some bases more than one. Everywhere. We have them on nuclear submarines, on aircraft carriers, almost all. Most Los Angelinos don't even know that you have an Air Force base right there near LAX called Los Angeles Air Force Base. Did you know that?
I did not.
Hey, and you live right there. That was the one of my kids when they graduated from the Air Force Academy. That was their base of initial assignment. If you just go to our, we just had Valentine's Day yesterday. We just had to break up. Did you see that Valentine's story that we had to break up? Did you see it?
I have not seen it yet.
Don't you get our? Aren't you on our list? Don't you get our press releases?
I get emails.
Yeah, so we had to stop a commander, a group of members of the military that were basically going to have a Valentine's Day party during the duty day in the headquarters building of a combat unit of warfighters. The theme was Jesus wants you to be his Valentine. So go to the website, see it. Story went pretty viral. It's everywhere out there, and that's a good example. We had 38 members of the military, all of them junior enlisted. Now, many journalists I talk to have no idea of what the difference is between an enlisted member of the military and an officer. Do you know what it is?
In my understanding,
in many cases, that's it. There are a lot of enlisted folks that have been to college, but to become an officer, basically, you have to be commissioned through West Point, Annapolis, or the Air Force Academy, ROTC, or Officer Candidate School, OCS, or Officer Training School, OTS. There are some direct commissions in certain cases, but generally the ranks lieutenant through four-star general or officers, and then you've heard of private and seamen and airmen. In this case, we had 38 very junior enlisted folks who came to us, most of them Christians again. We were able to get it stopped very quickly. This is blood sport. I've become a public figure, and I didn't ask to be a public figure. If you're a professional athlete, like a member of my beloved Los Angeles Dodgers, or if you're a Hollywood movie star, I'm sure being a public figure is probably really cool. But if you do what I do, which is civil rights activism in the U.S. military, it's four things. Lonely, dangerous, brutal, and expensive.
How often do you get death threats?
I would say we get pretty grotesque threats somewhere in the neighborhood of multiple times every day. We're very careful with everything where we live. We have a lot of guns. We have two German Shepherds in the backyard that are not pets. They're elite level, very expensive, highly trained protection security dogs. We have our own bodyguards. We work closely with the local law enforcement folks. We have a lot of countermeasures that we have to use. We've had the windows shot out of our house twice. We've had innocent animals beheaded. And disemboweled and left on the front of our house. We've had swastikas and crucifixes painted on the house. We've had beer bottles and feces thrown at the house. We've had tires slashed.
And all because people are upset that you're trying to maintain the integrity of the separation of church and state.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of it that my last name is not, my name was Joe, I was a plumber, or Smith or Jones, but it's Weinstein, and I'm a lawyer, right? So there's a tremendous amount of hatred in this country. There's a tremendous amount of ignorance in this country. We're finally beginning to pay for the fact that we stopped teaching civics in high school. I mean, in 2015, I guess I was naive in thinking that the American people would never elect someone as cowardly, ignorant, entitled, racist, misogynistic, homophobic, transphobic, and did I mention coward? I can't say that enough, as Donald Trump. And now if you support that, you know, which is the short term is MAGA, right? Make America Great Again. I couldn't be married to someone like that. I don't want to have friends like that. I told you, I have two exceptions.
I think it's important because if we're going to understand each other and get along in this country, it's not like he's going away, right? I don't know what the answer is for that. And it's interesting because you are Jewish, but I read on your bio that you're also a registered Republican. I'm sure people think you're a raging liberal winged nut or whatever.
Pacific Palisades isn't very far from you, is it?
It is not.
So a number of years ago, I was given a political courage award by the Pacific Palisades Democratic Club. Once they found out that I'd been a lawyer for Reagan in the White House and was a registered Republican, which is true, I haven't been able to find one to vote for about 30 years. You know, but other than that, I can't find a Republican that doesn't make me want to projectile vomit. About two or three days after they gave me the award, made the announcement, they decided they were going to take it back again. And then I had some great support from prior winners of that. Ambassador Joe Wilson, who's now passed away, Phil Donahue, Mike Farrell. Mike's on our advisory board, and he was the one
that... Mike's been on the show. He's great.
I love Mike. He's fantastic. And he was actually the one that when they recanted and said, no, I guess you can have the award. So they flew my wife and I out there, and Mike is the one that actually presented me with the award. I do disagree with you a little bit. I don't know that civil discourse is going to be possible anymore. If I need to sit down and explain, give me my views. If I need to explain to someone, if I have to explain why Donald Trump is a fucking piece of shit, and I don't know what your rules are on this podcast, but I am the way that I am. I'm a passionate person, highly flawed, passionate person. I'm not wasting my time if it's so odd. And I know that many of them are spoon-fed from Fox News. I did an interview with them the other day. You know, all of these, One American News, Newsmax, Breitbart, you know, all the ones that are out there, Epic News, Fox, they get spoon-fed by this crap. And you know, my own parents voted for Obama, then ended up voting for Trump again. I mean, they got a disease called Foxitis. If you know what I'm talking about. So no, I don't, I'm not able to stomach being around people like that. This is a real life thing. When you threaten to kill me or rape my wife or kill my kids and grandkids and our staffers, or you want to send bombs to us or the other stuff, no, that's serious stuff. That's why.
Well, I'm talking about sitting down with you, talking with somebody who has a different political discourse than you. I'm not talking about that. That's a whole other level.
I know what you're saying, but see, yeah. I disagree with one of the words you just said in that statement. I have a different view. I don't view it as political. It's existential now, just like that's become a cool word. Hey, finally, Biden's getting around to saying that. It's an existential threat. Or as Adam Kinzinger, also a Republican, who voted to impeach Trump and was on the was on the committee for reviewing everything that happened on January 6th and then got, then either left or he wasn't going to be like Liz Cheney. He wasn't going to be voted back in again. He said, look, this is about democracy.
Yeah.
And that's it. Every other issue is secondary. So either you support democracy or you don't.
Yeah.
So when people say, and I don't mean this derogatorily, or I don't mean to sound haughty about this or pejorative or pedantic, but it's not politics. We're using the alliterative P here. Pedantic, right? Pedagogy and everything.
There's
else.
Definitely a disconnect between folks who are supportive of Trump and those who call themselves patriots, because I've never seen someone who is so disrespectful and in disregard of a nation of peoples.
I agree, but see, it's like I said, it's not political. He's now saying, if you don't give us the money, NATO, Putin, you can do whatever you want.
Oh, I saw that. That's insane. It's insane.
I mean, so this is not about, no, I think he's probably mentally ill. I take this very seriously. So I'm incredibly disappointed in so many Americans. And even our own process. I mean, I love Michelle Obama, but when she said, when they go low, we go high. No, Michelle, when they go low, we have to go just as low to fight him, or even lower if we need to. I mean, literally, our way of life, there's a real good chance Trump will be elected back in again. And even, it's like our processes can't do anything, because I've been in these rooms with lots of progressive folks, organizations. When they get in a room together, they want to grab a pencil or a pen and peck each other's eyes out. I've been in those rooms. You get the conservatives in a room together, and they often work hand in glove just perfectly fine. They know how to fight and how to fight dirty. And on the other side, all I see is weakness, a lethargy.
I agree with you on that completely.
I give credit. I mean, but the fact that Fox called us, they were enraged about that Valentine's Day thing. But where was ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, NPR? We've done all of them. But it's very hard to get the mainstream media sitting back. And again, I'm all for capitalism. But I'm not for predatory capitalism. And it seems to be, how do I make money? And the same thing with Trump. You know, again, I think he's probably mentally ill, but to sit there and say, you know.
I think he owes some very scary people a whole lot of money, too. And I think.
Yes, exactly. Very likely, but we won't know for sure. But I'm just saying that if he gets back in again, you know, there's already this plan. I forget the exact name. It has the year 25 in it.
Oh, the 2025 project, yeah. And he also said blatantly to his constituents that he will enable a dictatorship. That's what he wants. Day one.
Of course he will. This time they've learned better. They're going to clean out all the career civil servants. They'll take care of everybody in the military. You will not be in any position of power unless you are prepared to support this agenda.
It's North Korea, basically.
I think right. I think the main, yeah, exactly. The main reason he needs to win is to stay out of jail.
Of course.
I mean, I'm surprised that he was even indicted. I can't actually imagine him actually being convicted and going to prison. I hope I'm wrong about that, but I do this for a living, and it's a very hard living. It's very much like kissing a buzzsaw or climbing an ice mountain naked every day. You know, when you decide that you're going to go up against the U.S. military, in particular, and our military is festooned with Christian nationalism. It just is. The one movie I would advise all of you to try to go see is Praying for Armageddon. We're in that one. It's a documentary. They're trying to get their distribution deal together right now, but you can look at the trailer, Praying for Armageddon, which talks about the same people we're fighting, praying so hard for the end of the world. They've had enough.
Yeah, they are.
Let's bring Jesus back. And you know, they're promised a 200 mile long river, 4.5 feet deep, with nothing but the blood of those that their version of weaponized Jesus, carrying an AR-15, has slaughtered at the Battle of Armageddon. So,
well, the irony, of course, is that if Jesus were to come back, he would embody all the things that they're rallying against.
I guess, you know, the problem is that if you look at certain parts of the New Testament, I mean, John 8:44 is thrown at me a lot, where Jesus says the Jews are the offspring of the devil. They're murderers and liars from the beginning. Of course, even in that book of John, he's referring to the Sadducees, or the Jews that are in power supposedly there. But they cherry pick this stuff. It's not as though this is a real chill little, a pacifistic Buddha. I mean, Jesus did say, "Don't make the mistake of thinking I came here to bring peace. I didn't. I came here to bring the sword." And the bottom line is, if you don't bend your knee and kiss his ring, you're going to be screwed up in this life, and then after you're dead, you'll burn eternally in the fires of hell, and you can't even look forward to going into shock and not feeling the flames anymore. I mean, I've had this explained to me many, many times, you know, usually on a daily basis. So most of our staff, about 84% of our staff, are Christians. Some of our best supporters are evangelical Christians who are on our staff. They donate, they're clients of ours. But of course, the difference between a fundamentalist Christian and an evangelical is that it's just like, I presume you probably have a driver's license. You're not free to drive anytime, anywhere. You cannot drive if you're stoned or drunk or you're too tired or you're on prescription medicine. And so our whole thing is simply focused not on whether Jesus or Buddha or Yahweh or Vishnu or Spider-Man is the correct God. It's simply, we look at three things: the time, the place, and the manner, Susan, in which a member of the military feels they have the right to deploy their faith or non-faith tradition. As I said, 99.9% of the time, it's a fundamentalist Christian trying to follow the so-called Great Commission, referenced at least twice in the New Testament, Mark 16:15 and Matthew 28:19, which is one of the last things Jesus is supposed to have said to his disciples, which is go and make disciples of all nations. If they try to use their military rank, you know, if you're even being gently proselytized, remember that is not like working at IBM or Taco Bell. That's your civilian boss, and you can tell them to, you know, to go fuck off. In the military, that's a felony to do that. In the military, it's a felony to have sexual intercourse with someone other than your spouse. Adultery destroys unit cohesion, good order, morale, and discipline, Susan. If you're ordered to go to the base dentist at 4 p.m. to get a teeth cleaning and you don't show up, that can be a felony. It's a very, and the U.S. Supreme Court has made it clear that the First Amendment in relation to the military is very different than what you get as a filmmaker, a journalist, or what I get as a civil rights advocate. You know, they want us to have the full panoply of rights for us under the First Amendment, not in the military. In the military, if you say or do something, the idea is we want to maximize the lethality of our military to ensure that we can protect the full panoply of constitutional rights for everybody else. How do you do that? You maximize good order, morale, discipline, and unit cohesion, mission accomplishment, and the health and the safety of the troops. So we don't care about any religious philosophy. What we care about is when you think you have the right, the time, place, and manner to deploy. That is our focus. But with my last name being obviously a Jewish surname, and with me being an attorney, my family, and like I said, I'm a registered Republican because it drives them crazy. I just, again, haven't been able to support that in about 3 decades. And three of my kids are Academy graduates from the Air Force Academy. I went to the Air Force Academy. My brother-in-law went to the Air Force Academy. My father was an honor graduate, distinguished graduate from the Naval Academy. So we have over 165 years accumulated of combat experience in my family in pretty much every major combat engagement the country's been in, from really going back to the Civil War to where we currently are. So we were kind of in the right position, the right time, place, and manner to fight this.
When did you see it begin? When did the tide turn?
February 4th, 2004. Hollywood, Mel Gibson, The Passion of the Christ came out. Did you ever see that movie?
I didn't want to see it.
We had to see it. That movie was pushed down the throats of the cadets at the Air Force Academy, where I had three of my kids at the time, by their officer and cadet chain of command. It was unbelievable. I looked at the movie. It was like a Jesus snuff film. We don't even refer to it by Mel Gibson's name, The Passion of the Christ. We call it The Jesus Chainsaw Massacre or Freddy versus Jesus. But if you'd seen it, and when I realized my kids were being forced and the other cadets, you know, I realized, okay, stop. You know, in real life, you know, in a movie like, you know, like the short one that you just did, I presume, music, you know, if something big happens, you hear the drums, the trumpets, the harps, whatever. But in real life, you don't have a soundtrack. So sometimes when these big moments come, that was Lexington and Concord for us. When I saw what my alma mater was doing and pushing this this movie on these kids and the staff, faculty, staff, and cadets, I stopped what I was doing. We started the fight. We pulled on the thread, and we began to realize that the whole sweater was coming off. 22 months later, we actually formed the Military Religious Freedom Foundation in December of 2005. We went to all the other organizations. You can't get the ACLU to answer the phone. It's hard to get anybody else's attention. Jewish War Veterans at the time did nothing. The Anti-Defamation League did next to nothing. So my wife and I finally realized, do we have to form something? It's not easy to form a civil rights organization whole cloth. And I mean, I had not really received death threats before, or threats, you know, against my wife and children, grandchildren, my parents, our staff. And you don't just suddenly go to school, here's how you start a civil rights organization. So for 22 months, we were in this before we realized we needed our own thing. We started with 5 cadets at the Air Force Academy who are clients. And like I said, now in a day or two, we'll go past 87,000, most of them Christians. And so being told that you are not Christian enough. And so we have over 1,100 LGBTQIA+ clients. We represent a little more than 18% of all Muslims in the U.S. military that we're aware of, and misogyny. And certainly we've helped many pregnant women that want an abortion. We've helped them, because all of that is tied into the mothership of fundamentalist Christianity. The hatred, so much hatred, as I said before, homophobia, transphobia, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, real hatred of the Constitution, everything that that people like Trump and those who support him think it's great, because, you know, if you support him, you get lots of dollars contributed to your campaigns and you get votes. If you go against him, you may not get that. So it's tremendous sense of despair and sadness looking at my good part of America, plenty. There are plenty of others that say this is no. We have to fight, but how do you fight against it? And I'd love to be able to have civil discourse and sit down and talk about it, but I think that ship has sailed, and we're facing the most consequential election easily in the history of our country. This is beyond.
I agree.
Beyond the Civil War. If he gets back, I guess I would pose this question to you and the listeners of your podcast, Susan. I don't know which will be the bigger bloodbath, if he gets back in again or if he doesn't, because he's not going to sit there and say the election was fair unless he wins it. You think he's going to sit there and say, I won, but it was terribly unfair. But there is a bloodbath coming. And so I don't know exactly the magnitude. I know perhaps you've even spoken to fellow Americans, friends, family that say, if he gets in, we're moving. Okay, where are you going to go? Where do you get away from the tentacles of America? You know, where do you think you're going to run to? I'm not going anywhere. And we're going to, you know, we will fly this airplane into a mountaintop if we have to fight again. When you get, we probably get between a dozen to 18 fairly grotesque threats on a daily basis. But we've had police on the job that made the threats on their, you know, on their computers. Certainly pre-COVID in particular, a lot of public speaking. I gave a speech at a large Christian university in Colorado. Not the Air Force Academy, but that would qualify these days, but a public Christian university in Colorado. Our security team went up a week before, as they normally do, and briefed the security people at this college. And then about 18 hours later, I got a threat from one of the security people at that college, a threat that came in. Yes, that's right. The college refused to fire him, but just said he wouldn't be working the security detail. Of course, we had to come up with a whole different way of moving. And of course, I normally don't speak without wearing Kevlar or a bulletproof vest and stuff, so I'm not going to make it easy, but you have to train with concealed carry weapons, which we all carry. You sit a certain way in a restaurant, in a movie theater. I mean, you try to do the best you can. I think about it a lot because, as Winston Churchill said, there's nothing more exhilarating in human experience than to have someone shoot at you and miss, you know, but I'm not so sure they're going to miss. And so, like I said, that we're not complex. It's pretty easy to see what we're doing. And in this America, I mean, I remember when we had the simple issue of just hating George W. Bush for his policies. And then Obama came in and we thought things would be better. They weren't. I mean, clearly he was better, but that didn't trickle down through the bureaucracy. And with Trump, it went on steroids. And if he gets back in again, which is certainly possible, I don't know, like I said, column A bloodbath or column B bloodbath. He gets in bloodbath, he doesn't get in bloodbath.
I'm frustrated that the Democrats haven't given us a better candidate.
You know, I don't know that anyone else could have beaten Trump in, 4 years ago. So what are they supposed to do? Put somebody else in there? My fear is that if they did, I mean, who would be the better candidate? I'm not happy with Biden's unequivocal support of Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel's slaughter of the Gaza.
Ugh, yeah, me neither. Yeah. The fact that the loss of life, even any loss of life, grotesque, but this is beyond the pale.
It is. And to sit there and say that every Gazan is a member of Hamas because they were.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, this, over half the population is under the age of 14. But you know, there are over 28,000 dead Gazans, Palestinians in Gaza. And of course, the people that unequivocally support Netanyahu say, well, that's coming from the Hamas health aid. Well, where are your numbers coming from? You're 1,200 or whatever. And I have family that live there. My kids went there for birthright. I've never been. I have no interest in going to Israel. I'm an American. And remember, during Trump's reign, yet another settlement in the West Bank was named after Trump, which he loves. I would have loved to see Bernie Sanders in or Elizabeth Warren. I could literally live with Liz Cheney being president as a Republican. I would sleep at night. With Mitt Romney, I would sleep at night. I hate Chris Christie. He's a sycophant, et cetera. I can't stand Nikki Haley. They all got on board the first time because it helped them out. There are some Republicans, and you know, Adam Kinzinger, as I said, I could sleep at night. And I was in the Reagan White House for over 3 years. I mean, I was there. I was one of his lawyers. And I was the committee management officer for the Iran-Contra investigation. I get it. I understand it. I feel confident in saying that if Reagan were alive today, he would be in a state of shock by Trump and the others that are there. There are many things he did that I couldn't stand. I was not a fan, but he was my client. But we're in a completely different parallax universe now. And it's hard to believe that this is happening, but it is. And the forces of rationality, Susan, and morality seemed to be moving very slow and unable to coalesce to fight back.
Well, and I feel like his followers give him a pass for literally anything, but at the same time, they're screaming about any other American doing far less damage.
Even this whole thing with Fani Willis right now. I mean, I wish he hadn't had this relationship but it's a peppercorn compared to the fact that this guy, Trump, called into the Secretary of State and said, "Find me just under 12,000 votes." I mean, come on. I mean, but Trump himself said several years ago he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue, apparently so.
That's the problem when the cult of personality rules the land.
Right. Putin is smart. I can't stand him, but he's smart. Ayatollah Khamenei, the head of Iran, is smart. Can't stand him. Kim Jong-un is smart. Can't stand him either. Xi Jinping, the head of China, smart. Can't stand him. Trump, not smart. Cowardly, been given everything. I think he's been, whatever frequency he's been generating since he was about a year and a half or two, that's the same frequency he's always had. But it resonates with those that show a very deep-seated level of hatred, bigotry, and prejudice against women. I have a close friend of mine here. He's actually on my board, who said, "Mikey, we're in the fix we're in now because there was irrational hatred of a woman running for president, Hillary, and irrational hatred of a black man who was president for 8 years, Obama." Irrational hatred of a woman running for president. We have a tremendous, it's not just the incels. You know, look at a woman, I look at Taylor Swift, who's obviously, she's up on the progressive side, very much so. She supported Biden back when he ran in 2020, but she's a woman, she's been very successful. She has well-earned power. She didn't inherit anything. And that is terrifying, not just to Republican men, but to certainly women as well. I think it's the irrational hatred of Hillary Clinton and the irrational hatred of a black man being president. And it shows us to be in a magnitude far more than we'd ever seen, a country that is racist, hateful, and bigoted. Now, is everyone in the country like that? No, of course not. I mean, Biden did win. Was he my first selection? Was he my fourth or fifth? No, but he's the God, and in a perfect world, we can't bring JFK back again.
Bobby. I would have preferred Bobby.
Oh, yeah. Bobby or Jimmy Carter. These are all people that I thought were great. Or I've often said that if you were walking down a dark city alley at 2 a.m. and you were stopped by a gang of, gangsters, and they said, "Okay, Susan or Mikey, we're going to give you two choices. You're in the wrong place at the wrong time. There are no cops here. You see this orange Sharpie? We're going to mark this on your left hand so hard, it'll take you 20 minutes in the shower to get that off. Or if you don't want that, we're going to stick this knife in your eye. So which would you like to have done to you? And then you can go home." You're obviously going to say, "Get that Sharpie out. I'll have to take that shower, but I'll try to get that orange stuff off my hand." So that's the difference between who the Democrats have and Trump. I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? How hard is this to make the decision? How difficult is it to say, and so to sit there, and I was even disappointed with Jon Stewart the other night. I don't want to see any, look, I'm on this, I'm the guest on today, so I'm giving you my views. I don't want to see any equating of badness between Biden, who's supposed to be a senile, but he's also running a giant crime family, and Trump, who's the most disgusting piece of filth I've ever seen as a human being. How hard is this to figure out? Well, apparently it's pretty hard.
I think we are in the fight of our life, for sure.
We are. We very much are. Yes. And I had a question for you. You're the host. I love the name of this podcast. Where did you come up with Hey Human?
I was in Nashville and a shooting occurred, another shooting. And within a couple months, the San Bernardino shooting and Pulse nightclub shooting happened. And I was at the bottom of my faith in humanity. And I was crying on the phone with my dad. And I said, I think we've gone too far. I don't think we can come back. And it's devastating what has happened to us as a species.
I agree with you. I if I may ask, what brought you to such the nadir of your sense of things being okay? I mean, how did you hit rock bottom? What had caused that? Just saying the cumulative effect of
the cumulative effect, and it was just one shooting after another, and the fact that people, instead of dealing with their own problems, decide to take it out on others. We all know now that the Pulse shooting occurred when a person who had deep self-loathing for homosexual tendencies didn't know how to deal with that, and so he's taking it out on everybody at that nightclub.
You have siblings?
Two much older brothers.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Do they feel very similar to you about the way things are going down?
I think that my eldest brother suffered a pretty severe stroke. I don't know that he thinks a lot about a lot of things, but I'd certainly, the middle child is, I mean, his daughter is trans. So right there, you've already got a different fight on your hands for just hoping to keep her alive.
No, I mean, it's we have a number of, you know, of parents of trans children and trans clients ourselves. And we did our research on the podcast, or I wouldn't be giving this much time to it. I mean, there's only 86,000 seconds in a day, and they're all very valuable to all of us. And so
I appreciate that.
No, that's why I wanted to make time to be able to do this. And we, you know, particularly I look back at a number of my classmates from the Air Force Academy. Can't even speak to them anymore. Not all of them. Some of them are supporters and donors and whatever, but if we go to these events where we're all together, the last one was a disaster for the Air Force Navy football game. We got together in one of our classmates owns a bar in, you know, in Tampa. We all gathered there, and that turned out to be a disaster. And I can't even go to the reunions anymore without bringing a phalanx of bodyguards. It's just too expensive. You know, why would I mess with that? So on the bright side, he hasn't been reelected yet. We need people. My own son is a member of the House of Representatives in Ohio. He's a state rep, three term, but he's running for the Senate there now.
Good.
And he feels the same way you and I feel about, you know, the country and the important things. And even the idea of gun control. I mean, we have a lot of guns in our house. We have to qualify every 2 years. We go through a very careful background check. I mean, there are just some rational and reasonable measures we can take. You know, most Americans, it seems, don't have a lot of knowledge about our Constitution. They don't understand. I mean, Israel doesn't even have a Constitution. At least we have one. Like, I guess, fish in an aquarium, Susan, they never see the water. You know, so you just live in this country. Hey, I'm oblivious, but I get all these, have this great life going on here. And then the idea that we're being flooded by an army of immigrants, like zombies coming across the border, complete and utter bullshit as well.
It is utter bullshit. I mean, I have friends who are literally at the border, border patrol people. And it's a really interesting damned if you do, damned if you don't, because I see Fox News gets pissed when they say $1 million worth of fentanyl seized. Da-da-da, look at what's happening. It's like, wait a minute. Wait, do you want it to be stopped or do you not want it to be stopped? You better make up your mind, because those are two totally different things.
Well, it isn't that we need to fix immigration. I mean, we've had to make it better for generations.
Certainly.
There is no army of people that are coming across the border with teeth in their mouth. They're going to take our jobs and stab our, you know, to take over our homes, kill our pet, eat our pets, and all the other stuff.
Yeah.
It's been manufactured. And the fact that a monster like Mike Johnson, as the House Speaker, is going to hold up aid to Ukraine, you know, aid to Israel, Taiwan, right? I've been delighted to be on here. It's an honor. I hope you're, what is the name of your short film?
It's called The First.
Did you go to film school, or how did you learn how to do that?
I didn't. I'm a professional songwriter, and every song you write is like a mini movie. And I have always been into film. I love going to the movies. I love reading screenplays. And I thought, this is what I want to do next. So I started doing it.
Are you totally solo? Are you repped by any of the agencies out there?
No, I'm not repped yet.
Not yet. Well, I hope that works out.
I'd love to see it.
I'd love to know. Is there any sort of a trailer for The First yet, or anything like that?
It's too short to have a trailer. I will definitely put it out on the festival circuit, but I'm happy to send you a copy when it's ready.
Please do so. I'd love to see it.
And if you come to Los Angeles, please let me know. I'd love to buy you a cup of Joe.
I will make sure of that, because I mean, that's one place where, you know, we have our media and web folks. We are repped in Hollywood, and we have folks there we need to go see and stuff like that, and a lot of a big client base.
I really appreciate your time. I know how valuable it is. Thank you. I think the work you're doing is incredibly important.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you for listening, everyone. I appreciate it. Be well.
Thanks, Susan. You too. Bye-bye.